Bring it down. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today is new information on the measles, mumps, and rubella, or the MMR vaccine, and autism. Also, the changing social environment for vaccination critics. Are you allowed today, anywhere in our mainstream media or in our scientific journals, to offer legitimate and documented criticism of our mandatory vaccines in some states and our recommended vaccines in all others? I ask this question for a simple reason, because today all the major newspapers around the United States and all the news media are chomping at the bit at the 90% success rate with the new COVID-19 vaccine from Pfizer. There are over 100 plus vaccines for COVID in the making, many experimental, never before having been used, and they're only allowing a 2-month follow-up period to determine if there are adverse effects. That raises a lot of red flags, because unless we take a look back and see what they have acknowledged, what they have accepted as legitimate criticism of the existing safety and efficacy of our vaccine program, then think of what will happen if we have autoimmune reactions in people who already have autoimmune conditions, and those are tens of millions of individuals. And what about the people who are sick with diabetes, a comorbidity, emphysema, comorbidity, COPD, comorbidity, heart disease, congestive heart failure, asthma? These are all comorbidities that make a person who is infected with the COVID-19 more susceptible to life-threatening or ending their life altogether. So if we're told that a vaccine is going to be able to help them, and then we see that it does not test whether or not you end up being helped if you're very sick or prevent you from dying or being hospitalized, then we're being oversold. And I believe that we have not yet heard from a responsible, independent-minded person coming forward from the government, like the Surgeon General or the head of Health and Human Services, and saying, here's exactly what this vaccine is able to do, and here is what we know. It is shown in very short-term, fast-tracked experiments, and there is a high risk in some people and no certainties for anyone. Then I believe that the American public will have a more realistic picture of what we're dealing with. Otherwise, just like AZT, developed by Burroughs Wellcome, an extremely toxic drug, so toxic that the person who I interviewed, who invented it at the National Cancer Institute, threw it on the junk heap of science because it was so toxic they wouldn't even recommend it for terminal patients. And yet asymptomatic, HIV-positive, but otherwise healthy persons began to take this and developed AIDS-like conditions and died. So we're all very concerned that this is being fast-tracked. It is not going through the proper channels. But then again, which vaccines have? That is the nature of our discussion. My guest, Professor Brian Hooker. Professor Hooker is an associate professor of biology at Simpson University in California and a senior consultant for ARES Corporation, specializing in environmental restoration design. His analysis of the CDC's data about the measles, mumps, rubella, or the MMR vaccine in autism was published in the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons. For years, he has been investigating the scientific evidence for vaccine-autism connection and the flaws in vaccine safety. He also has a son with autism and has been active in autism community work for increasing public awareness about this epidemic. Over the years, he has filed many Freedom of Information Act or FOIA requests with federal health agencies and was in receipt of thousands of pages of documents from the CDC and one man in particular, Dr. William Thompson, questioning the efficacy and safety of vaccination. He has been a point independent researcher in the recent whistleblower case with Dr. Thompson from the CDC regarding vaccine dangers. And for more information, go to childrenshealthdefense.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I think it's such an important time to be discussing vaccine safety in general with the revelation from Pfizer and all of the candidates that are coming forward for the COVID-19 vaccine and the fact that they're fast-tracked and obviously woefully inadequate safety studies being done.
What we're going to do to begin is we're going to take a look back at vaccines in general, but the MMR vaccine specifically, and here is the reason. On yesterday's noon program, Richard Gale presented reams of actual court documents showing that Pfizer has been stepping over a line of ethical behavior for decades. And yet not a single news outlet, nor anyone at the National Institutes of Health or Anthony Fauci's National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease has mentioned anything about the moral character and the capacity to commit serial offenses involving its drugs. We are accepting at face value that this is only really to help prevent or in some way to deter COVID-19, and not looking at how much profit will be made from this for any company in the business. That said, I'd like for you to take us through in detail, please take your time, what you discovered, and you can prove with documentation, it's not opinion, about the dangers of the MMR vaccine. The forum is yours.
Well, to take you back to 2013, this is when Dr. William Thompson, is also known as the CDC whistleblower, contacted me specifically regarding the relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism. And the relationship is not only very, very statistically significant in African American males, looking at the African American males that got the MMR on time versus those that received the MMR vaccine delayed after 36 months of life. There was a very, very strong statistically significant relationship, and three times as many cases of autism were diagnosed in those that received the MMR vaccine on time. In addition, there was a relationship with what's called isolated autism, which we know as an autism dad, I know as regressive autism, and the administration of the MMR vaccine. Dr. Thompson stepped forward in 2013 because he was exposing fraud in a paper that the CDC published, DiStefano et al., back in 2004. And Dr. Thompson gave me evidence directly, thousands and thousands of pages of documentation, to show that the CDC knew of these relationships as early as November 7th, 2001. Specifically the African-American effect, where they were seeing more autism in African-American males due to the MMR vaccine, and also the isolated autism. He knew that as early as November 7th, 2001, and this was covered up directly by the CDC. All records of this were destroyed, except for records that Thompson secretly kept on his hard drive that he shared with me in 2013 and 2014. And I subsequently did the analysis myself. I do epidemiology. I've published about 13 different papers in the epidemiology, specifically around autism and developmental delays and their relationship to vaccines. And I did the reanalysis. Dr. Thompson affirmed the results that I received, and then we went public with this fraud in August of 2014. I did publish a paper on that. The original paper was in the journal Translational Neurodegeneration. The results were sound, the results were solid, but after some very, very dubious correspondences with the publication, they chose to retract my article, only for me to republish the article in an expanded form, which appeared in the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons in 2018. The CDC covered up these results. There is a relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism. This was also highlighted in the movie Vaxxed that came out in 2016. The entire controversy was highlighted in that movie. And I approached directly congressional representatives in order for them to subpoena Dr. William Thompson in Congress, specifically the Congressional Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, and was stonewalled. And the congressional committee heads, it was like a hot potato. It passed from the congressional committee head, Daryl Issa. It went then directly to Jason Chaffetz. Then it went to Trey Gowdy. And then when the Democrats controlled regained control of Congress, then to Elijah Cummings. And there was no activity. There was no response. There was no action to subpoena William Thompson.
What happened, which is so rare, normally when you file a Freedom of Information Act request, you get a response, frequently a lot of material redacted, blacked out, but you actually got a phone call, or you had a phone call with him, and that's almost never done. So explain what happened and take us through that whole line of questioning until you start to realize that, hey, he's revealing things. It's like a mea culpa. He's explaining his complicity in a cover-up. Take us through that story.
Well, I received a phone call in November of 2013, and I did not take the call. I let it go to voicemail, but I realized that it was a CDC number, that somebody from the CDC was trying to contact me directly. And at this time, I had filed over 100 FOIA requests from the CDC in the past. Back in 2005, I had actually gotten anonymous harassing phone calls from the CDC. And so I dare not pick up. My history with CDC phone calls was not very good. So I ended up not taking the call, but curiosity got the best of me, and I called the number back, and it was one William Thompson. We eventually started to correspond on the phone, and the first thing that Dr. Thompson told me was, I can get you information that you cannot get via the Freedom of Information Act. And then over a time span, very, very quickly, Dr. Thompson, actually through official circles, got me the data were fraudulent, and he brought forward the information showing that there was a strong relationship with African-American males and also a strong relationship with regressive autism. And so he uncovered this fraud, and rather than going through the Freedom of Information Act, he shared privately with me through hundreds of emails, different correspondences, different runs of his data. He was the statistician on the study, so he was actually doing the statistics on this study that affirmed this particular fraud. In order to capture that, we had a very intense relationship for 8 months on the phone, and it was almost like I was his priest, and he was confessing the fraudulent activities of the CDC, that not only the crux of them was this MMR study, but also went beyond that MMR study and went to the investigations that the CDC was doing in between vaccines and autism in general. He shared over 10,000 pages of documents with me. That information is publicly available. Later on in our correspondences, I legally recorded 4 of the phone conversations that I had with William Thompson. You can actually get the transcripts of those phone conversations and actually hear the audio at a website called fearlessparent.org. And I made sure that Dr. Thompson confessed the fraud in those particular phone conversations. It became evident in August of 2014 that we needed to go public with this information. And so in August of 2014, after I had published my original paper on translational neuro in the journal Translational Neurodegeneration. Then we went public with the fraud. I was working with Andy Wakefield to go public and had correspondences released where Dr. Thompson was confessing the fraud directly. And so this happened in August of 2014.
Explain in detail what the fraud was, who was involved, who knew about it, how high up the chain of command at the CDC, which is run like a military office, how high up did it go?
The fraud specifically was the fact that the MMR was responsible and was showing a relationship with autism in African American males. Those that got the MMR vaccine on time were three times more likely to get autism than those African American males that waited until 36 months of life or 3 years of life or after. So if they delayed the MMR vaccine, then they were much, much less likely to get autism. That fraud, that result was very, very alarming to all the co-authors on the study that came out in 2004. And the individuals involved in the fraud were Dr. William Thompson, Dr. Frank DiStefano, who was and is still currently the head of the Immunization Safety Office at the CDC, Dr. Marshallin Yergin-Alsop, who was in charge of the Developmental Disabilities Branch, basically had oversight for all CDC activities regarding autism at that time, and then Dr. Colleen Boyle, who was since retired, but was the head of the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. She was in charge of all activities of birth defects and developmental disabilities for the CDC, for the entire nation. And when Dr. Thompson then was asked to, in September of 2002, was asked to destroy all the information that showed that there was a relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism, specifically in African Americans and more specifically in African American males. All that information was destroyed on a Saturday. They hauled in big blue trash bins, so all the information, all the hard copies of the information could be shredded, and then all the electronic information except for what Dr. Thompson shared or kept private without the knowledge of his supervisors. Then he, because of this fraud, because of his crisis of conscience, he went to the highest levels of the CDC to alert them that the final publication was fraudulent, the final publication which denied a relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism was fraudulent. So he emailed the CDC director, Dr. Julie Gerberding. This was right before the Institute of Medicine meeting regarding vaccines and autism, and he alerted Dr. Gerberding that the fraud had occurred and that essentially he was going to blow the lid open on the fraud at the 2004 Institute of Medicine meeting on vaccines and autism. Okay, so this went to the highest level. Now, Julie Gerberding could have allowed that fraud to be exposed by Dr. Thompson back in 2004, but instead, she put Dr. Thompson on administrative leave of absence. He was threatened with being fired from the CDC. He was told that he had a psychological problem, and instead, the fraud stood. The fraudulent results were presented in the 2004 Institute of Medicine meeting, and the CDC's word, which was fraudulent, was that the MMR does not cause autism in any way, shape, or form. So this fraud was perpetrated through the highest levels of the CDC, and Dr. Thompson himself tried to warn the CDC director that the fraud was going on. She chose to perpetrate the fraud and then made Dr. Thompson, who was trying to expose the fraud, made him the villain.
What did Dr. Thompson do?
Dr. Thompson specifically then exposed the fraud at the CDC, he was put on administrative leave of absence for approximately a month. And then at that particular point, he was offered a $25,000 bonus to stay at the CDC for his silence. And he kept silent from 2004 until he called me in 2013 with a crisis of conscience in order to re-expose this fraud.
So the entire scientific community in America and all the pro-vaccine advocates, including the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, all the media doctors, medical doctors, they have all been believing in a lie that vaccines are safe and effective, all of them, and that especially the MMR vaccine, which is mandatory in California and other states, New York State, that these are safe and effective, and yet it was all a lie. So why then didn't Dr. Thompson just convene a press conference in front of the Justice Department or the CDC and expose this?
The reason, you know, Dr. Thompson stayed silent until 2004 to 2013. And honestly, Gary, the reason is beyond me. I have no idea why he maintained his silence. The only thing that I know is that he was offered a tremendous bonus of $25,000, which was over 25% of his salary at the time, to stay in the CDC. And I actually have FOIA correspondences. These are not correspondences that I got from Thompson directly, but I have correspondences that I got via the Freedom of Information Act that showed that CDC officials were afraid of Thompson leaving the CDC and doing exactly what you said and exposing this before the Department of Justice. He did not file a whistleblower complaint in 2004. However, he did then, when he reinitiated contact with me in 2013, he did file a whistleblower complaint in 2014 that went absolutely nowhere. But his silence from 2004 until he contacted me in 2013 is a mystery to me, and it makes me, you know, feel that it at that point, when he went undercover, he was complicit in that fraud, and that fraud then remained and it was not exposed for 9 years.
Okay, let's deconstruct this even more. Prior to this, there was the Simpsonwood fraud. Tell us about the Simpsonwood and how Robert Kennedy Jr. was able to get the documents under Freedom of Information Act to show once again that the vaccine was, at that time containing mercury, was a contributing factor to autism in a large study, and they hid that. They covered that up. And by the way, aren't these cover-ups, intentionally destroying documents, aren't those classical obstruction of justice? And couldn't those be criminal in nature?
So I'm going to go backwards. I want to answer your last question first, and that is absolutely. This is the Federal Records Act of 1950 as amended and amended to bring it to date to 2020 says that it is illegal to destroy federal records. Okay, so if you take documents that are used for policy science and used for the decision making, specifically in the CDC, these are classified as federal records, and those federal records, it is completely illegal to do what they did with the MMR and also what they did in Simpsonwood with the Marisol-containing vaccines and bearing mountains and mountains of data showing that the mercury-containing vaccines were causing much, much higher levels of autism. And this dates back even earlier to 1999 when Dr. Thomas Verstraeten, who was the scientist in the study, showed a strong relationship with the Marisol exposure and autism incidence, okay, especially the Marisol exposure in the first month of life. The Simpsonwood meeting was convened after the CDC officials at the highest level were shown that there was a definitive relationship between mercury in vaccines and autism and the autism epidemic, which was raging, and autism was at epidemic proportions even back there, and even worse 20 years later. So what happened was, after Dr. Verstraeten showed these results, showed definitively that there was a relationship, the CDC convened a secret meeting involving industry officials, public health scientists, and CDC officials, where they decided what they were going to do with the fact that thimerosal was causing autism. Okay. Simpson Wood is a retreat center. It was for, and it was chosen for the meeting to conduct the meeting off-site of the CDC, so they would not be subject to the Freedom of Information Act. They wanted not for the meeting to be held outside of CDC headquarters because they were trying to dodge the Freedom of Information Act. However, the individuals at an organization called Safe Minds, and also through the through Dan Burton's congressional office back in the early 2000s, were able to get a transcript directly of this meeting. And the meeting transcript was never to, in terms of what the CDC wanted, was never to show the light of day. And basically, it is 2 days worth of CDC officials, industry officials, and independent scientists talking about how they could dilute the effect statistically and absolve thimerosal from the autism epidemic, and the reasons why. You know, basically there were discussions on what litigation would ensue if the CDC came forward and showed the truth, not the fraud, but the truth that thimerosal and vaccines was causing autism. Okay, and to me, as an autism dad, I see 2 days worth of private industry meetings with the CDC, where instead of being concerned about individuals who were autistic and were exposed to thimerosal-containing vaccines, instead of talking about those children, talking about the suffering of children, they talked about the litigation that would ensue, and they talked about the reputation of the CDC, and so therefore, the conclusion of the two-day meeting was to perpetrate the fraud and to completely absolve thimerosal-containing vaccines from the autism epidemic. So Simpson Wood is a classic fraud. It's regarding vaccines and autism, and it happened. The actual meeting happened in 2000. And it's another instance where the CDC was trying to indemnify vaccines from the autism epidemic in the United States. Nothing could be further from the truth. The fraud around the thimerosal-containing vaccines and the fraud around the MMR vaccine show clearly vaccines are causing autism in the United States and around the world.
Two additional points on this, please. One, there was a testimony before Congress of many people, including Ms. Doyle, at the CDC, where Burton asked specifically, was there any science showing a connection? And she said no. This would have been after she knew that she was telling Congress an untruth, which meant that she was perjuring herself. Now, from what I understand, there's no statute of limitations on people perjuring themselves before Congress. Why hasn't anyone looked at bringing her and all the other people who testified under oath when they knew the truth and they hid the truth from members of Congress under oath?
This is a real sticking point with me. I went directly to the congressional liaison after that perjury took place. You're talking about perjury that took place by Dr. Colleen Boyle, the head of the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. It was a meeting on autism and vaccines that was convened in the Congressional Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Happened in late, I believe it was November 2012. And after Congressman Bill Posey And Dan Burton asked Colleen Boyle specific questions. She perjured herself and said that there was no relationship between vaccines and autism and that there were no studies that the CDC had done to show that. Even though she was complicit in the fraud regarding the MMR vaccine and complicit regarding the fraud around Tamiflu-containing vaccines. So when that perjury occurred, I went directly to my congressional liaison, who worked directly for the head of the committee at the time, Representative Daryl Issa, and his comment was that Dr. Boyle's testimony was questionable. Okay, he said to me directly that it was questionable, and reading between the lines, I sincerely believe that congressional liaison and Daryl Issa knew that Dr. Colleen Boyle committed perjury. I then showed documentation of the fraud directly to the Oversight and Government Reform Committee liaisons and showed that she had committed perjury. No action was ever taken place. No, there was never any type of comeuppance. There was never any type of charge of perjury that was filed against Dr. Colleen Boyle. But she did commit perjury, and she perjured herself before Congress.
One other aspect of this is that around the same time of the Simpson-Wood and up to the Thompson debacle, Dr. Andrew Wakefield was just one of a group of gastroenterologists, principally, and physicians in a free hospital in London who were examining a small number, I think it was 12 or so, children who had autism spectrum disorder, and they were having problems with the mitochondria in their gut. And one of the world's leading experts on this topic was there as well. They published the results. They did not say there was a definite connection. They simply said more research needed to be done about the consequences of what they saw. And it was published in The Lancet. And shortly thereafter, The Lancet article was withdrawn, and the chief doctor and the scientist in that, as well as Andrew Wakefield, lost their licenses in what many of us deem a horrible injustice. In fact, I did a six-hour special on the radio where I debated Brian Deere, because Wakefield didn't want to participate. In any case, the doctor, chief doctor, sued and won. And yet his winning and the highest court, what equivalent to their Supreme Court, found him completely innocent, and Wakefield and him were charged identically. That meant that Wakefield was in it. And yet in the United States, Anderson Cooper and other people in the American media really went after Wakefield, and he was pillared everywhere. And so that meant that the people inside the CDC, and by the way, I believe that also included in Simpson was a representative of the World Health Organization, wasn't there, personally?
That is correct. His name is John Clements, and he was the representative for the World Health Organization. He was there at Simpsonwood.
So the World Health Organization, a corrupt little stupid organization, even back then, was participating in a known fraud. And these are the same people, same institutions, the same CDC, that is going to oversee the and rubber stamp the newest COVID vaccine, whoever ends up developing it. And I just want people to know the truth is. So take us through also Andrew Wakefield's dilemma, because had they told the truth that Simpson wouldn't, had they told the truth that the CDC, instead of perjuring themselves and legally destroying evidence, Wakefield and his team would never have been challenged.
Dr. Wakefield is one of the greatest heroes that I've ever met, and he's one of the greatest heroes in history. What he did in his Lancet paper that was published back in 1998 and then retracted partially, I believe, in 2003 and then fully retracted in 2010 was open the door to more research and to the fact that there was a relationship between the MMR vaccine and the autistic enterocolitis, the autistic gut problems that he was seeing in the 12 patients in that original Lancet study. Dr. Thompson was completely vilified. and I believe that this was a strong, concerted effort by big pharma and by big media to basically indemnify the MMR vaccine, because the makers of the MMR vaccine then would have a huge, huge problem on their hands, and that at the time it was GlaxoSmithKline as well as Merck. And so Dr. Wakefield took the fall. He basically was brought before the General Medical Council of the United Kingdom in a kangaroo court. Evidence was presented against him, much of the evidence was presented and actually fabricated by the investigative journalist that you mentioned, Brian Deer. And much of the testimony was false. And so Dr. Wakefield lost his license. He was what they call written off of the rolls of medical licenses in the United Kingdom. At the same time, the same thing happened to the lead scientist on the Lancet study. His name is John Walker Smith. Okay. And so John Walker Smith lost his license and was written off at the same time as Dr. Andrew Wakefield. John Walker Smith appealed that decision, okay, and then on appeal, the decision of the General Medical Council was overturned, and the judge in the appeal basically exposed the fact that the original indictment of Wakefield and John Walker Smith regarding this quote-unquote, you know, fraudulent scheme to show that the MMR caused autism, the judge said that it was preposterous and it was some of the worst litigation that he had ever seen. And Dr. John Walker Smith was completely vindicated. He was shown innocent of all the charges that were made by the General Medical Council, all the charges that were basically fabricated by Big Pharma and Brian Deer. And so he was vindicated. Dr. Andrew Wakefield should have been vindicated at the time, but again, he was the industry fall guy. He was the crux of the anti-vaccine movement in their eyes, and so he became public enemy number one. He should have been reinstated. He should be practicing medicine in the UK right now, but that was never done, and justice was never served. And the fact that he would even broach the question in his original 1998 paper that the MMR could be causing autistic enterocolitis then created this whole scenario where it destroyed his career, it destroyed his livelihood, it destroyed his life.
Did anything ever get exposed in the British press concerning the attacks against this group and how they were unfounded? Because once the Supreme Court, or what amounts to the highest court in Great Britain, found that this Dr. Smith, who was very eminent, highly respected, was completely innocent of all charges and showed what kind of an abysmal case was brought against him, did any journalist or anyone else say, hey, what went on here? Who was behind this? What do we know that we can prove?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. I didn't extensively look at the British press at the time, but you know, the whole decision around John Walker Smith was buried, and the way that I found out that the case had even occurred was through the alternative media in the United States and through the health freedom movement. And so, you know, to my knowledge, this was covered up. Andrew Wakefield was still public enemy number one because he was causing horrible, you know, quote unquote, horrible measles epidemics in the United Kingdom, and so on and so forth. And so this was never, by the mainstream press, this was never brought to the light of day.
That's unfortunate, because had they done this, I'm quite sure they would have seen Big Pharma's fingerprints all over this. We did over 27 special investigations on my radio program, culminating in the six-hour special. And anyone listening to it, and we only dealt with facts, not emotions, not personal attacks, and I debated Brian Deer, but to have left this the way it was is to allow this type of injustice to occur. Now, let's go back to the people you mentioned who knew the truth. people that many people in conservative media have seen, like Trey Gowdy, and think very highly of. But if you are accurate, and I know that you have been only accurate with us, then some of these leading people chose not to use the truth that you provided in the evidence to protect the lives of especially African-American boys 36 months and younger, where there was over 324% increase in autism in them. And also one of the people, Eliza Cummings, he is one of the leaders of the Black Caucus. I would have thought that he would have been all over this. And we then tried to go within the African-American community to ministers with this evidence and got absolutely nowhere. So tell us about the people who knew the truth and chose not to act on it.
This was very, very discouraging. There was I worked with congressional officials before the revelations from Dr. Thompson. I was working with congressional officials in the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and as Dr. Thompson was corresponding with me, and when he and I started corresponding in 2013 and 2014, I was still working with congressional officials in the Oversight and Government Reform Committee and telling them confidentially that there was a whistleblower. And, you know, at first, their interest was piqued. This was under the chairmanship of Representative Daryl Issa. However, partisan politics dictated that this was less important than, you know, what the rest of the agenda of oversight and government reform. And I was told specifically that this was not an important issue. And, you know, which was laughable to me, that, you know, looking at the state of health and the autism epidemic, specifically in African-American males, was not an important issue. And so then after Representative Issa retired, then the entire staff of that particular committee changed and had to be re-educated. And so we went through Representative Jason Chaffetz, again, a very esteemed conservative who would not touch the issue. I met directly with Representative Jason Chaffetz twice and unfolded the fraud to me, or to him. He saw the fraud. He saw it directly. He acknowledged that something fraudulent did occur. But when push came to shove, he would not subpoena Dr. Thompson. And Dr. Thompson could not appear on his own accord. He had to be subpoenaed because the CDC would prevent him from confessing on his own accord. Okay, even with whistleblower status. Okay, so he was never subpoenaed. Jason Chaffetz, you know, basically kicked a can down the road, and then here comes Trey Gowdy, another esteemed Republican representative who took over oversight and government reform. I again exposed the fraud. I was working actually with Andrew Wakefield at the time. We both exposed the fraud. I was never even allowed a meeting with Trey Gowdy. I only met with his staffers. They were completely uninterested in the fraud. And then at that particular point in time, then the control of Congress went back to the Democratic side, and Elijah Cummings was actually, not only did we try to contact Elijah Cummings' office, but he was contacted by head ministers from the Nation of Islam, who was the only African American organization that was concerned about this fraud. He had direct correspondences with head ministers from the Nation of Islam, and when they pressed him about subpoenaing William Thompson, he simply hung up the phone. Okay, so he hung up the phone. He was being told of the fraud directly, and he chose to take a blind eye to what was happening to his own community.
We don't know the reasons why. I don't like guessing. But if you were to give the most reasonable explanation why all the people in Congress that were contacted refused to touch this dealing with autism, and especially in the state of California, where there were hearings, and I might mention I had a lot of evidence to bring to the fore, to the listeners who had been undecided through KPFA, and KPFK, A, at the last moment, boycott, or didn't boycott, they simply suppressed us. They engaged in blocking our freedom of speech, even though I've been on Pacifica for 44 years, every day, more than any other person in their history. The only person in the history of Pacifica, of all the thousands of hosts, to receive Outstanding Lifetime Achievement Award, breaking more original stories, never having to apologize because my articles and information is accurate, and they would not allow any of my information on the MMR vaccine to be given in a one-hour special, which could have turned the tide and stopped the vote in favor of mandatory vaccines. And all those legislators, including Dr. Pan out there, who is the advocate for mandatory vaccines in children, now I understand he's interested in adults as well, those people clearly would have possibly changed their vote if they knew all this information. Your thoughts about who is most likely motivating everyone to close their door?
I hate broad sweeping generalizations. I can't stand broad sweeping generalizations, but money talks. And the pharmaceutical lobby in Congress and also in the state legislatures, legislators as well, is so pervasive and so controlling. For every congressional representative on, you know, there's 535 representatives if you combine the House and the Senate, there are fully three pharmaceutical lobbyists for each one of those. So there's, again, on Capitol Hill, there are over 1,500 pharmaceutical lobbyists, 3-1. So I'm a single person going to a congressional office. So every time I go and I meet with somebody in Congress, three pharmaceutical lobbyists come out of the woodwork and they can write big checks. You know, people like me, I don't write big checks. And so you look at the individuals and you look at specifically, I think the biggest example of somebody who received such a tremendous amount of pharmaceutical money was Jason Chaffetz. And so it is in their best financial interests with their personal campaign contributions and their PACs as well in order to cover up this story. It was, you know, for their own congressional livelihood, for their own careers in politics, then this story would have been counterintuitive. Okay, and so the fraud was perpetrated, and that is my best guess. And I know, I know for a fact that the pharmaceutical lobby is the most powerful lobby in Congress.
That's correct. Well, Brian, it is subjective. It's just a hypothesis. We're not making accusations. We're merely giving our best guesstimate. Now, that said, since Chaffetz is now a Fox contributor and no longer in Congress, Trey Gowdy is no longer in Congress, why don't you write them a letter, send me a copy of it, and ask them, since you refused to address this issue when you were in Congress, do you have the courage to address it now that you're out of Congress? Just to see what response they give you.
That is such a great idea.
All right? Because, hey, they have no one that is going to be looking over their shoulder at what they're doing now. All right? So this way they can do what they want. All right.
I will do that, and I will copy Dan Burton, and I will copy Bill Posey. The only friend that we have in Congress right now is Representative Bill Posey, and he is not a congressional committee head.
Can you get him to appear on this show so we can ask him questions?
I can certainly ask.
We have the largest progressive audience in the world of any radio show, so we could get behind opening up the gate on this, even if it's, you know, it's like the coal crime.
Right.
You can go back and revisit it. Now, a few more quick issues here. Where do we stand now with respect to vaccine autism debate? And we find new research coming from Professor Chris Exley in the United Kingdom and Dr. Schoenfeld in Israel about the neurotoxic dangers of aluminum compound adjuvants in vaccines, yet none of this being acknowledged by the larger medical community. Oh, let's not forget, Julie Gerberding, head of the CDC, who knew of this and participated, went to work for Merck and got millions of dollars in stock because we saw the notice when she sold them So I would like to also see what she says on this issue now. Could you address these two issues, please?
Yes, and I have to actually point out my own study. I am a scientist. I am a statistician, epidemiologist. And in May of this year, I published a study with Neil Miller, who is a prolific author who's talked about the vaccine safety. He's written about five different books about vaccine safety and published about 13 different peer-reviewed publications. And we did a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study. And what we found, and we had a group of 2,400 children in private medical practices. We had access directly to their private medical records. They were followed up continuously. They were followed up on vaccination records. They were followed up on all diagnoses. And what we found is the children that were vaccinated were at least twice as likely to be diagnosed with a developmental delay compared to those children that, who were fully unvaccinated. And we were fortunate. We had a large proportion. We had 34% of the children that were considered in that study were completely unvaccinated. And so these studies exist. It was published in a journal called Sage Open Medicine. It's on PubMed. It is indexed on PubMed. And it shows a relationship, a strong statistically significant relationship between vaccines and developmental delays. And so, you know, to say that publications aren't out there that show that there is a relationship is preposterous. To say that there are not vax versus unvax studies is preposterous. My study joins another study by Anthony Mawson that was done in 2017. You also talked about Christopher Exley and his research, and he showed that when he did autopsies, or when he looked at, not at autopsies, excuse me, but he looked at autistic brains of deceased children and adults with autism, and he compared them with neurotypical brains, and he saw 10 times as much aluminum. Okay, so the autistic brains were hyperaccumulating the aluminum, and the biggest source of aluminum that we have is directly injected, and that is through aluminum adjuvants and vaccines. That came out in 2019. That's called the MOLD study. MOLD was the first author, but the head of the research project was Dr. Christopher Exley. And he's since looked at additional information and additional data, and he's looking at mechanistically how aluminum can cause autism. Okay, and so he is doing wonderful work. In addition to that, you mentioned Yehuda Schoenfeld, who is looking at aluminum and autoimmunity. And autoimmunity plays a very, very strong role in the autistic condition. Most children with autism have some type of autoimmune comorbidity. My own son has Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune disease. And there's a lot of evidence that shows that autism is autoimmune through the attacking of myelin sheath and nervous tissue and brain tissue. Okay, so they're doing groundbreaking work not only on the fact that there is greater levels of aluminum in autistic brains, but also looking at the mechanism, what mechanisms by which aluminum-containing vaccines can and do cause autism. And then, I, this may be a shameless plug, but my own vax versus unvax study, it's been downloaded from the journal's website 150,000 times, which is about 10 times more than any other paper that journal has published. And it does show, you know, people that say there aren't vax versus unvax studies out there, They're wrong. And they have been published, and they are published in reputable peer review journals that are indexed on the National Library of Medicine.
We appreciate that. Hold one second, please. Brian Hooker, my guest professor, you've heard a lot of interesting and original information today. Just remember, all the cast of characters or their agencies or offices and Big Pharma and the World Health Organization, they're all the same people today in power. And if what they did with the MMR vaccine and many other vaccines like Gardasil, do you think for a moment that they're not going to have the same attitude towards the COVID vaccine? Just a reminder. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.